Hello, everyone. This is a rather unusual experiences paper in that it talks about our experiences during a tech transfer, actually transforming a research prototype database into a production database for a scalable file system product. And this is joint work with my fellow researchers, many of whom are here in the audience, as well as our colleagues at HP Storage. We are drowning in data, and so we just saw some trace analysis to help prove that point. But so a study from IBM estimates that the world generates about 15 petabytes of data every day, and the vast majority of that data is unstructured, things like emails or blogs, that sort of thing. And the percentage of unstructured data is actually growing over time. The goal, the high-level goal in this space really is to allow organizations to make sense of all this data, even if it comes from a variety of different sources, and so that they can actually provide relevant results to users in a timely fashion. Now, one way that people actually make sense of unstructured information is to extract metadata that helps them to infer what the underlying structure of the data is. We published a paper a few years ago at Eurasys on a system called LazyBase. LazyBase is a repository for this kind of metadata. And our original target applications were in the enterprise information management space, specifically enterprise search and electronic discovery. So the idea was that content-based metadata would be extracted from all of the files in an organization and then sent to LazyBase for queries. The observation here is that these kinds of applications can tolerate some amount of staleness in the data that they access. So we use this to our advantage in defining an architecture that really focused more on the speed of processing these metadata updates as they came into the system. So as a result, the architecture uses a functionally partitioned pipeline design where metadata updates are uploaded into the system, and then those updates are batched together so that they can be processed efficiently throughout the pipeline. Queries come into the system, they query the output of the pipeline, and if they need more up-to-date results, they can actually reach back in and incorporate results from intermediate stages of the pipeline as well. And so the system is scalable in the sense that all of the different stages of the pipeline are independently parallelizable. And so this is a high-level overview of the system, and I'll go through more of the details of how LazyBase works as we go through the talk. So while we and our friends at CMU were working on LazyBase, HP Storage was thinking about file systems, in particular scale-out file systems for archival applications. And so this is the product that later became known as HP Storall. And so the goal here was to allow applications to put large numbers of files, so on the order of hundreds of millions or even billions of files, into an archival file system, where they could actually, you know, retain the files for a particular period of time to match regulatory requirements and so on. Now, at this scale, you need to be able to have a distributed system to implement this. And so the basic conceptual architecture of Storall's file system is shown in this slide. And the basic idea is that the storage is managed as a pool of segments, which are then managed by couplet pairs throughout the system. And so the idea is that processing nodes work as a pair to manage those segments. And so if one of the nodes fails, its partner can take over the management of those segments. In addition to this scalable data storage platform, HP Storage also wanted to provide very rich metadata services alongside so that users could actually find what they had stored in the file system. Now, at this scale, it's really not feasible to use file system search operations on extended attributes or even on the file system tree in order to satisfy those kinds of queries. So they recognized that they needed to have a metadata database engine sitting alongside. The question was, what should that database be? This is where we started talking with them to understand, well, what are the requirements, and could LazyBase possibly fill this set of goals? As I mentioned, the main use case that they were looking at least initially, was file archiving. And so in the file archiving world, these kinds of applications are tolerant of slightly stale results, so a good match for LazyBase's design. In addition, the update characteristics. So the metadata in this context is really file system metadata, and we'll see in a little bit custom metadata as well. So the file system metadata is generated by the file system whenever files are created or deleted or modified or retained and so on. So we need to be able to handle a very high update rate because we need to be able to handle all of these different kinds of file operations. Because the scale-out architecture of the file system, the metadata services need to scale out in addition to the data services. Again, a good match for LazyBase's design. One of the ways that they wanted to provide rich metadata services was to allow users to define their own custom metadata tags. So for instance, if you had an imaging archive, you might want to tag an x-ray with the patient's name or with the doctor's name. And so the idea was that users should be able to define arbitrary numbers of these custom tags for each file or directory. And the kinds of queries that the database would see are, you know, there would be both canned reporting kinds of functionalities where you know what the query is ahead of time, you're trying to understand a summary of how the storage is being utilized in the system. But they also would cover ad hoc user queries where users could look for all of the attributes associated with a particular file, all of the files in a particular directory, and then perhaps the most important, you know, to search for the set of files that matched a set of metadata criteria. For instance, all of the recently modified files that had a particular tag associated with them. And so, as I mentioned, you know, LazyBase was a very, very good match for the first couple of bullets on the slide, because those are kind of the use cases that we had defined the system to handle. The remaining use cases or aspects of this use case was less clearly a match, but you know, we figured that it seemed really feasible with a certain amount of work, and I'll tell you a little bit more about some of the work that we did in order to make that happen. So this is a short slot, so we only have time to go through some highlights of what some of those experiences are, and I'll encourage you to stop by our poster or visit one of us during the breaks to understand more about these lessons. So I'll go through two high-level lessons and then, you know, more of a feasibility and usability kind of a lesson at the end. So let's start with auto-incrementing IDs. So in order to achieve good space utilization in databases, databases often will map very large values onto smaller values. And so the idea is that rather than having a long string value, say, that then is included in multiple different tables all through the system, you could actually map that string onto a shorter value, for instance, an integer, and then use that integer as a surrogate for the long string wherever it would have appeared in a bunch of different tables. As a result, the database community often refers to this as surrogate key assignment. One way to do this is to use as your IDs a 64-bit integer that auto-increments over time. And so this is actually the choice that we made in the LazyBase prototype, was to use these auto-incrementing IDs and to have an explicit ID remap stage that assigned those IDs. And in doing so, we were able to achieve better space utilization as well as, you know, potentially improve the speed of processing during our pipeline. And we did actually see, you know, dramatic improvements for merge processing using these integers rather than the long strings. The question was, you know, whether we should actually use IDs in the product. And so the initial thought that we had was that, well, there are long strings in a file system environment, so the path names are going to be very long, and it would be a very natural choice to map those path names onto IDs. And that's what we did in our initial prototype for the system. So the path names were mapped onto IDs, and those IDs were then used as the primary key for most of the tables. This had some interesting implications, though, for our update processing as well as for our query processing. On the update side of things, it was very interesting because you need to assign IDs that haven't been assigned before. If you see a new string, you need to maintain the key, the string to ID mapping in completely up-to-date fashion. So we couldn't really apply the same laziness principles that we applied to all of the other data in the system to this string to ID mapping. In addition, because we were using auto-incrementing IDs, you pretty much had to issue the next ID when you were assigning things. So really, this means that you assign IDs one at a time. So there's really not an opportunity for parallelism between the batches that are being processed. And so the only way to introduce parallelism here is really to partition the key space. And so that's certainly a technique. But there's the potential, if you don't do that, for this stage to become a scalability bottleneck. On the query side, there were interesting implications. Recall that I said that one of the use cases was to be able to do a directory lookup of all the attributes for a particular directory. In a world where your tables are organized by the path name themselves, or you have an index on path name, a directory lookup is really just a range query inside of your using the index on path name. That means that you only have to access a small fraction of the rows in your table. In contrast, if you have IDs in your system, then the processing is a bit more complicated. And in that world, you can still achieve an indexed range lookup on your ID table. But then you also have to, if you want to retrieve additional attributes that are associated with the file, you have to join with the table that contains those additional attributes. And you know, you're you're not necessarily going to be able to look at a small contiguous region of that table in order to look up those attributes. So you're going to end up, you know, because they're scattered throughout the table, because the table is organized based on the ID, the numeric ID. And so as a result, you end up, doing both a join between these two tables and then also doing a full table scan of the rather large table that's associated with the rest of the attributes. This turns out to be very inefficient. And I have some numbers to illustrate just how inefficient. Excuse me. And so here we looked at a data set that was 100 million files, and we looked at individual file lookup queries as well as directory listing kinds of queries, both for smallish and medium-sized directories. And as you can see, the ID-oriented architecture takes on the order of minutes to complete these queries, whereas if you don't have IDs, it takes on the order of seconds or maybe a second to actually complete these kinds of queries. And so, as a result, based on the scalability challenges that we saw on the ingest side and the performance challenges that we saw on the query side, we decided to eliminate the auto-incrementing IDs and the ID remap stage in the product version of the database. Another interesting set of lessons that we learned was around the transactional model for the database. So let's just review what that looks like. In LazyBase, there's a separate path for processing updates versus processing read-only queries. And so if we think of the updates first, updates are observational in that an update provides a new or a modified value for one or more of the columns in the row. And then those values are used to update the underlying table in the database. And as I mentioned, updates are batched together into what we call self-consistent updates, or SCUs. And SCUs are the basic transactional unit for processing updates. And the idea is that when an SCU comes into the system, it'll be written durably so that we have a copy of it. It'll be applied atomically throughout the pipeline. And it will be used to consistently update different tables that modify associated pieces of information. On the read query side, read queries will see a snapshot isolation model of consistency. And so that basically means that whatever the state of the database is when the query starts, that's what data is going to be queryable for the duration of that query. Now note that there's not really a notion of read, modify, write transactions here. Because of the asynchronous kind of processing that we do in the pipeline, it's very difficult to be able to read the most up-to-date version of a particular row so that you can then use the value there to determine how to modify that row. For instance, that value might not, that set of data might not have even been uploaded into the system just yet. So as a result, LazyBase doesn't support read, modify, write transactions. It really just focuses on observational updates. And this had some interesting implications for our file system workload. So in particular, this was in the space of processing custom attributes and file deletions. And so recall that custom attributes, users can add those, and they can add an arbitrary number of custom attributes for each file. And since that list is kind of unbounded, we decided to store the custom attributes in a separate table. From the rest of the system attributes. And so the invariant that we needed to preserve here was that whenever users tried to query for custom attributes, they shouldn't be able to see any custom attributes for deleted files. It just kind of makes sense, right? You wouldn't want to necessarily do a query and find that you had selected a deleted file. So the challenge came because when you were processing file deletion events, there was no easy way to query the state of the database for what the set of custom attributes were that were associated with that particular file. There was no easy way to figure out what those were so that you could delete them at the same time as you deleted the system metadata associated with the file. So we thought about it for a little while, and the solution that we came up with was to explicitly enforce the data integrity as part of the database schema. So what that means is that the database will explicitly track timestamps associated with file creation and deletion events, as well as custom metadata operations. And then queries need to include the logic that will actually compare the timestamps so that they will only present custom attributes for live files that match the criteria for the query. Now, what this means is that we're not explicitly deleting the custom attributes when files get deleted. So we need a separate garbage collection pass to go through and ensure that we can remove the custom attributes for deleted files because they're no longer needed. Similarly, we want to keep the size of the file lifetime table small so that those query time operations actually can be fast. So putting it all together, we have a great scale-out file system and an interesting database, and so how do we marry the two together so that they can integrate and work well together? Well, the first step is making sure that we can get events from the file system into the database. And to do that, we hook into the file system journaling mechanism. And there's a journal scanner that essentially sits there and reads those events from the file system, and then we'll batch them together and upload them into the database. LazyBase originally provided a programmatic interface for writing queries, which was great. It provided great performance if you knew what your query was ahead of time. But since in this environment, we didn't necessarily know what those queries were going to be, we needed to provide a more flexible API. So we added a SQL layer on the front of that. We didn't want to rewrite this entirely from scratch ourselves, so we leveraged open source offerings like Postgres in order to do that, taking advantage of Postgres's foreign data wrapper interface. So it basically allows Postgres queries to operate on top of an external data source, in this case, the LazyBase table files. And so this was great. It provided a lot of flexibility for administrators to be able to write queries. And so this is the functionality that is known as Express Query. We weren't done then yet because it's difficult to write SQL queries, especially when you have to do things like include logic for comparing timestamps of custom attributes. So one final piece of work that we were involved with was to help to define a RESTful API for accessing the metadata that's stored in the database. And in particular, this REST API is used for allowing users to add custom attributes to the files. It also allows them to post queries of the database. So they issue a GET request for a particular set of attributes with a particular set of search criteria. That gets translated into a SQL query that's posed to the database, and then the results are sent back and converted to JSON. This turned out to be a very interesting area that had its own set of research questions, but that's the topic of another talk. I've just had a chance to go through a handful of the interesting experiences that we had. There are lots more that are described in the paper, and so I encourage you to take a look there, as well as to stop by the poster. And some of the experiences, my favorite one to talk about is actually why we decided to not include freshness queries in the product. So come ask us about that. To conclude, StoreAll with Express Query is a scalable archival file system that has very rich metadata capabilities. And those metadata capabilities are provided through a metadata database that's based on research that was developed at HP Labs. So organic innovation is alive and well at HP. Some of the lessons that we learned along the way in transforming this research prototype into the production database. First of all, we had a lot of validation of the original design decisions that we had made. Things like batching and pipelining actually worked quite well in this environment. But we also found that there were some fallacies in our original design. For instance, the ID remapping work. And there were also issues that were prompted by the use case that we hadn't really anticipated in the original research prototype. For instance, some of the issues around multi-table kinds of deletion operations. And then finally, we found that usability and flexibility sometimes trump performance. And so we ended up adding a SQL and RESTful APIs on top of the database that we had developed. So with that, I'll pause and take questions. And while we wait, I'll say we are hiring, so come and talk with us out at the front.
Hi, I'm Scott Akmuti from EMC. Did you look at doing other things besides eliminating the auto-incrementing IDs, like hashing the path names?
So hashing the path names is an interesting idea. I would certainly get rid of the auto-incrementing nature of that. One of the challenges there, though, is we do want to preserve the locality that you see in the path names so that you can do things like directory listings. And so as a result, we ended up not going with a hashing solution.
Brent Welch, Google. So the distributed file system probably already has an ID that's perfectly good, right? Why didn't you just, and isn't that going to show up in the journals and everything? I'm just curious why you were ignoring the inode number and the server number and all that stuff.
And so, that's a good question. It anticipates, kind of a subsequent version of the schema. And so we do take advantage of that ID that's going to persist across, different, migration types of opportunity, that sort of thing. So we are now, we're taking advantage of that ID to be the unique identifier for these tables and then having sort orders or, indexes basically that are based on the path name in order to do that.
Yeah, and I guess it's the difference between a general purpose indexer that can handle lots of stuff versus right. Something that's tailored to a you know, a single system.
Exactly. You know, and so, you know, when we were originally developing LazyBase, you know, the goal was to be able to map large strings. You know, they might be, you know, text words in a document. They might be path names. They might be whatever, you know, and do that in a very general fashion. And so, you know, as you point out, there's a special purpose solution here.
Hi, Jacob Farmer with Cambridge Computer. I'm curious, if you're associating metadata with the directory tree or the or folders, do you have any interesting tree operation challenges? Like I'd imagine, I've seen archival file systems with 10, 15 billion files in them and maybe a 10 to 1 ratio of folders to files. So a couple billion records in a tree could be a pretty big tree to manage.
Right, and so the metadata that we store is stored as tables in the database, and so there are tables that are associated with the system attributes for those files, tables associated with the custom attributes in those files. The directory structure, other than in the, it's encoded in the path name, but it's not directly encoded in the data, that, the metadata that we're storing in the database. So what that means is that for a very large system, you know, our database could have to manage billions of rows in each of those tables, and so you know we've tested at that, you know, at that level, and it works well. Indexes work really quite well if you have highly selective queries in that case.
Hello, nice talk. Su Qing from Data Storage Institute, Singapore. So this seems like you collect the quite rich for metadata for metadata query. Mm-hmm. So I just want to know from the base distributed system to feed, in order to feed the rich for metadata. So you, when you generate these metadata from the distributed file system, whether the performance of this distributed file system will be affected, since you will feed the metadata to the lazy database, right? So when you feed this database, you have to generate this metadata, then whether the it will affect the base performance of the file system.
I see what you mean. So the journaling mechanism is happening anyway. There are other consumers of this information, and so it's not as if we're instrumenting the file system to generate these events, you know, in a special purpose way that is only being used to feed into the metadata database. So the journaling is happening anyway. And so in terms of the, you know, the overheads that are imposed on the system, it's really just, you know, the processes that are responsible for actually consuming that metadata and then uploading it into the database and the database as well. You know, so there's, you know, there's a small amount of additional overhead that's imposed on the you know, the machines that are running the file system, but you know, it hasn't been prohibitive. Does that answer your question? I'm not sure I followed the question entirely.
Oh, okay.
Maybe we can take it offline.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Let me thank Kim again.
Thanks.